Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Agent Chat Live. Agent Chat Live is a spin-off of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about both shows, visit pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake and Reframe. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Agent Chat Live. Today, I have Amanda Orozco. Oh, I should have asked you if that was the correct pronunciation. I'm sorry, we were chatting for so long. Amanda Orozco is a literary agent, transatlantic, based out of Los Angeles. She graduated from NYU with her Master's of Science in Publishing, Digital and Print Media. Before joining Transatlantic, she worked in subsidiary rights at Little Brown and at Park & Fine Literary and Media. While at NYU, she interned at the National Book Foundation, Shree Williams Public Relations, and the Gerner Company. So please welcome to Agent Chat Live, Amanda. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Awesome. So we have Heather said hi, pubbers. So Pub Talk Live is my regular show, and this is a spinoff of it. And so the regulars say, they call themselves pubbers, which is super cool.
Awesome. You have a following. Hi, Heather.
Yeah. I have a small but dedicated group that come to most of the videos, so it's awesome. All right. So Amanda's link and Twitter, by the way, is in the description, so you can get that if you would like to follow her. Hey, Courtney. And so my goal here is to help potential clients get to know agents a little bit better. Viewers are welcome to drop questions in the comments, but I do kind of want to start off by saying that I won't really be asking questions that a Google search can answer. So things like word count or like how long should a query letter be or something like that. But I also won't be asking anything like that I like to call pre-queries, where people are like, oh, are you interested in this book about mermaids in space or whatever, you know?
That sounds awesome.
I know. I always use that as my example. And everyone's like, yes, I want that. And that. Hello from Delaware. Hi. Hello. It's probably significantly cooler where you are than where we are.
For sure.
All right, so let's just start off with the easy one. What genres and categories do you represent?
Yeah, so I represent quite a range, which I think reflects just my own taste in reading. I have quite a broad interest across the board, but, you know, I go everywhere from children's and YA to adult fiction and nonfiction. And, you know, on the children's side, anywhere from board books to picture books to select middle grade and YA, which, you know, as I'm sure many, many people have, I grew up like devouring. So YA has a special place in my heart. And then on the adult side, you know, I have about half fiction, half nonfiction clients. And in fiction, you know, just really looking for that voicey narrative where the protagonist's personality really just pops off the page. You know, anything that is light and fluffy, offbeat and quirky, or, you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum, I also really love dark, gritty, twisty stories. I love, you know, anything from contemporary to romance, things with speculative or horror elements. But yeah, I have like, you know, my dream authors that I would love to represent if they weren't already represented, or, you know, the people I would love to find that have like similar works, you know, anywhere from Mary H.K. Choi to Elizabeth Acevedo, Wakey Wang, Kylie Reid, Leigh Bardugo, Ling Ma, and, you know, Carmen Maria Machado obviously is just a rock star, and she's amazing, so brilliant. Kathy Park Hong and Jenny O'Dell on the nonfiction side. So yeah, those are just a few of my recent favorites. Yeah, I'm also just particularly drawn to stories from Asian and Latinx writers. Really care about bringing forward stories from the margins, even if it's stories that have already been told, but maybe not from the perspective that we've heard from yet. And stories that bring us to a different place, you know, and kind of reveal a different part of the world that we haven't quite seen. So that's a little bit about me. And yeah, I'll also just add, I love, you know, magical realism, folklores, mythologies, you know, anything that is like kind of a modern twist on those. I love those as well. So that's the laundry list.
Awesome. One of our regulars, well, she can come sometimes. She lives in Australia, so sometimes the time doesn't work for her. But she always asks, Tamara always asks, if you could work with any published author, who would it be? And you kind of answered that already, so that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I would also add Bingen Lee, because I have gotten a chance to meet her, and she is just the kindest person. Like, I was being a total dork and fangirling when I like went up to say hi to her, and she was like, "Do you want to take a selfie?" And I was like, "Yeah." But yeah, she's amazing too. So
nice. So why did you get into agenting in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. Just in the course of getting into the industry, I had an amazing experience at the Gurner Company, where I was interning as I was getting my foot, you know, in the door of the industry. And I think from that experience, really getting to see the care that agents take in looking at their clients' work and, you know, managing their clients' career, and how much editorial work actually really goes into working with an author before sending it out, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, like most people, before I knew anything about the industry, I wanted to be an editor, because I was like, yeah, that's the only job there is. And then, like, through the course of all my internships and my work experience, kind of getting to see the breadth of like how many people actually touch a book. And I think it was exciting to me, the agenting side of getting to work so closely with an author, not just for like one project, but also over the course of their career, and getting to provide that like early editorial feedback and really kind of get to work with that diamond in the rough and just like refine it. And yeah, I've always really loved talking about books with others. And, you know, when there's a book I am really passionate and enthusiastic about, like finding the people who I think should read it or who would love it, you know, like, so I think that's part of what agenting is, really, is finding the projects you're really passionate about and then finding the people who will love it as well.
Awesome. Cool. We have a question from the comments. I'll ask real quick. When will Amanda be opening to queries again?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually just recently closed. It's something I do periodically, just because I want to be fair to the people who have already sent in their queries, and I want to make sure I'm responding in a timely way. Mm-hmm. And it can feel a bit overwhelming, like as they keep pouring in. So I'm hoping by the end of this month, I'll be able to have caught up enough to be able to reopen. So I think generally I'll kind of have a pattern of closing, you know, for a month, just to give myself time to respond and make sure, yeah, I have enough time to actually read what I have instead of, you know, getting distracted by like the incoming queries. But that's a great question.
Nice. All right. So this next question has a preface, because I find if I ask it straight on, agents will be too humble. So I'm giving you a chance to brag about yourself a little bit. So I encourage you to take advantage of it. If someone is thinking about querying you and your wish list lines up with their work, why should someone query you? Why would you make a good agent for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for prefacing it too. I think, you know, as for myself, I'm still building my list. I joined Transatlantic in the fall of last year. And so right now I have a select list of clients, and I think that gives me a lot of time to be able to work really hands-on with the clients that I have. And I really enjoy the collaborative work, you know, getting to kind of go back and forth and provide the feedback and get the revision and then kind of go from there and really strategize, not just like the strategy for, you know, the work that we're currently looking at, but also just like the next few projects, the career, you know, really thinking through even like a backlist title that, you know, if we have the audio rights for it, what do we do? Who should we submit it to? You know, really trying to maximize everything. Cause, you know, I recognize that it's a career for some of my clients. And so really trying to make sure that like I'm doing what I can to just maximize the projects that they have spent so much time and they've dedicated, you know, so much work towards, really trying to make sure I serve them as best I can. And yeah, along with that, you know, I'm very communicative. I care a lot just about making sure that my clients are looped in for every step of the way and that they know what's going on, you know, that they're not just left in the lurch. And it can be hard because publishing moves so slowly that like sometimes it's like nothing to report or there's nothing new right now. You know, it's only been 2 weeks, you know, it's still early. You know, everybody has a lot to read. And so I think it's just a matter of providing that like constant feedback of like, there's nothing new to report, but like, we're gonna, you know, here's what we're gonna do. Here's what we can do in the meantime. And yeah, and I think also just my background and my work experience, I have a lot of experience in sub rights. So I have a bit more of like an international vision for a work. And you know, when we do have world rights, really kind of getting the chance to think through how can we submit this to foreign publishers and get this, you know, translated and published, because that's always really exciting to be able to say, I have a like Russian translation of my work. Like, that's really cool. And I think, yeah, even just from my experience of working at Little Brown, kind of getting to see the foreign editions come in and sending them on to the agent and authors, and just being able to like see a bookshelf with all the different editions. It's a really exciting part. In the same vein, I really love the film TV side. And that's something that we as an agency are growing a lot in. We've just recently this year met with quite a few of the big agencies, and we work non-exclusively with them, which I think gives us the advantage of being able to really choose who's going to be the best to partner with. And yeah, and I'm myself a huge film TV buff, and I love, you know, watching especially things that are coming out on Netflix and things like that. But yeah, just really thinking through not just the book itself, but the strategy for the whole content, you know, kind of having a broader vision of that for either a single project or like the career, client's whole career. So yeah, I don't know if that did it enough there, but yeah, I'm just really excited, and I you know, am really passionate. I am a little bit like once I'm really into something, I'm really into it, and so you know, I don't get tired of it quickly at all. And yeah, I just really love working one-on-one with authors and clients and developing, you know, a long-term relationship. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, so just yesterday I was listening to the Deadline City episode about agents. I don't know if you listen to the podcast with Danielle Clayton and Zoraida Cordova. And that was one of the things that they spent a lot of time talking about, is it was important to them to have an agent that would help them strategize their career and prioritize, you know, the different things that they needed to prioritize in order to have the career that they wanted to have. And so it's something I've been thinking about a lot, like the last 24 hours because of that conversation, you know? So, yeah, that's good to hear. All right, so we're going to switch gears a little bit. We have, so my Patreon supporters can submit questions ahead of time. And I have two questions from Patreon supporter Lodestar. The first one we're going to do now, and we talked about this before. I'm going to switch it up from what I emailed you. So he saw that you played Mahjong, and he was excited because he had to train all his friends how to play so that he would have people to play with. So he was like, how do you find people to play Mahjong with? And then I think the second part of the question is, did you watch Crazy Rich Asians?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so he was asking how you felt about the Mahjong scene in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, that's actually really funny. I'll answer that second question first, because when I first saw it, I didn't really understand like the impact of it. It was before I had really like learned the rules and like what everything meant. And my mom is Chinese, and so like every Chinese New Year, you know, we would go to her side of the family and like they would sit down to play Mahjong, and I would be at the table too, but my mom would basically be like, oh, do that. Like she didn't really teach us how to play. And it wasn't until, you know, I'd gone to Hong Kong to visit my grandparents, 2 years ago now, where like I actually really learned how to play. And it was at like this table that like shuffles it automatically for you like rises up with like the perfectly set stack. And so that was so fun. We actually, you know, no regrets at all, but we spent most of our time while we were there playing Mahjong instead of visiting the city, which was great, you know. And so I think after that trip, then really understanding like what everything meant, getting to see that scene in Crazy Rich Asians, I was like, oh my gosh, like it actually makes a big difference. Like you understand the significance of like her sacrificing that piece of like, she knew she could win, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. She gave up the piece, the winning piece. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of finding people to play with, it is hard. I think especially in this time when, you know, you have to limit your personal contact. And it is just one of those games that like you can play it online, but I think you miss out on a lot of the, just like the fun of it, of being able to be in person. So mm-hmm. we actually, my partner and I just moved into a new building. And so we have now like, 30 other units of people that we can potentially reach out to, to like ask if they want to learn how to play and teach them. So yeah, but it's hard. We've taught like many of our friends to play, and once they get it, they really enjoy it. It seems like a lot more intimidating than it is, but if you mm-hmm. think of it as just like a version of poker almost, it like maybe is a little easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I played like a little bit digitally, but I've never played with an actual like tactile set. But in Crazy Rich Asians, it's, she gave up the piece, right? And, but she also, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that the mother knew, right? The mother knew that she could have won and didn't on purpose, was part of it, right?
Yeah. I don't actually remember now that you bring that up. I thought it was the piece that like she knew the mom needed, and so she gave it up so that mm-hmm. her mom could win, which is like, you know, the whole metaphor for whatever the situation. But I think it was also, I don't know if it was the piece that would have made her win, but like she maybe already had a winning hand. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so. anyway, we can talk about that for a while. So let's see. We have another question from the comments, so we'll go ahead and do that. What are some questions that writers commonly don't think to ask on the call, and I guess maybe should?
Yeah, that's a good question. I honestly, I don't know. I think I would actually reverse that maybe and say, from my experience, it almost feels like authors will have like a bullet point list of questions to ask. And, you know, the conversation gets a little hijacked by that list, where it doesn't feel so much as a conversation as, I don't want to say interrogation feels a little bit strong, but like a bit of an inquisition. And you kind of lose that personal aspect of like, you're also just trying to feel out each other, you know, you're trying to really get a sense of who this person is and if you would work well together, you know, at the end of the day, that's really what it's about. And, you know, you can kind of sense if this person has really read your full work or if they had a reader read it, and kind of provide a report. And, so I think, you know, I actually would kind of counter that question with another question of like, what do you really care about in terms of like what you're looking for in an agent? And you should ask those questions, you know, instead of trying to go off of the internet list of questions.
Yeah, that's interesting because when I queried, I had an offer from a publisher and an agent offered representation. And in the conversation, like through the conversation that we had on the call, I realized he probably did not read my entire book. Like I could just tell from the way that he was, I was going to say talking about my book, but more importantly, not talking about my book, you know? And then when I signed with my agent, like the call that I had with the person who's my agent now, it was like completely opposite. Like she just kind of like gushed about the book and the things that she liked about it. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the questions too, that, you know, is on one of those lists of like, well, what was your favorite part of the book and that kind of thing. But yeah, I think you can tell when somebody has actually read it and knows exactly like what happens and the end of the story, and they don't keep it general and just like kind of lay on the like general flattery. Yeah.
This is another question that have a caveat. It's the second of three questions that have a an introduction. So often when I hear this question asked, it's like, if you had a magic wand, what would you change about the industry, right? Which is to me as a pragmatist is like a very frustrating question because no one has a magic wand. So realistically, let's say you were like the CEO of Penguin Random House, soon to be Penguin Random House, Simon Schuster, whatever, like all of them combined, I guess. And you could change like one big thing about the industry. What do you think that you would change?
Oh man. Yeah, that's a tough question. But I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is really, I think putting my money where my mouth is, you know, in terms of like, yes, we want to publish more diverse voices and actually putting money behind that. I think with last year and the whole publishing paid me thing, it just became really clear that there's a whole discrepancy of what advances authors of color get versus, you know, the franchise white authors. And yeah, and I think there could be a lot more change in that regard. There could be more risk taking. I think there has just been a general trend lately of, I mean, lots of people have talked about it, but the disappearing midlist, you know, and how so much of the company's money is being put towards these, you know, flash in the pan, big bestseller books by celebrities that aren't even written by them, you know, like the ghost written books that like, you know, are really just capitalizing on the person or celebrity's platform. So I think that would be the first thing I would want to change is really putting aside more money for authors of color and really making sure. And I think there is, you know, efforts to do that right now. But I think along with that, you know, it would mean, you know, taking on less of those platform driven books, or maybe just being more selective about which ones of those they publish, because it's a lot of money. You know, some of the advances are millions of dollars and you know, some of them are flops. And so then there's like millions of dollars that go towards this book that actually didn't sell. So I think there's just a line of thinking there that, you know, needs to maybe be reevaluated. And I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot more data that the publishers have on that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is just from my own perspective, being currently outside of a publisher's perspective. And, you know, ultimately just comes down to the dollars and capitalism. But, you know, there's only so much we could change. And yeah, so that would be the first thing I'd want to change.
Nice. Have you ever heard of the podcast You're Wrong About?
No.
Oh, I love it. I just finished, like, I started listening to it during quarantine. I just finished, like, the backlog. But they talk about, like, historical, social things that the general public has misconceptions about or misremembers, usually because of the fault of bad journalism at the time, right? Mm-hmm. But one of their, like, kind of taglines or whatever is, it was capitalism all along. Because, like, the root of, like, so many bad things was just, like, someone trying to make money.
Right. Yeah, and I think on the other end of that, it's also just, like, we as readers and consumers, we just need to be buying more authors of color. You know, the ones that do get published, we should, you know, get behind them. And I was really excited to see how, I mean, The Vanishing Half has just really taken off this year and has just continued to be a bestseller. And I think that is just, I'm really happy for Britt Bennett and the way that Riverhead especially has kind of come alongside her in her career. And so things like that, where it's like there are so many authors of color, and it's kind of just a matter of, like, being in it for the long haul and coming alongside them in their career and supporting them on all ends, you know, as we as people in the industry, but also, you know, consumers mm-hmm. could be more mindful about using their dollars and supporting authors of color.
All right. So if you sign a client, what can they expect after that? What does that process normally look like? You know, how do you communicate with them? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So I guess logistically, like, after signing a client, you know, we have a follow-up conversation about next steps. You know, if during our initial call, you know, we kind of get into, you know, here are some areas that maybe we could improve in the manuscript, or, you know, here's how we want to make it stronger before submitting it, then we kind of have another conversation that's more in depth. I'll usually provide more notes, you know, through email, just in a letter, in terms of, like, here are some of the general areas, but also page notes, you know, getting real specific and doing some line editing as well. And and then from there, kind of talking through, okay, like, revision wise, what does your timeline look like? Let's set a deadline that works for you and your schedule. And then, yeah, kind of checking in periodically, depending on how far out that deadline is, to see if there's anything I can do to help. You know, and then also kind of doing the welcoming of the new client to the agency and kind of getting that out there and supporting, you know, if the author does already have social media, kind of helping to help build that out and support that and engaging with that. But yeah, I do have a pretty open communication style. I like to, you know, check in, you know, if it's been 2 or 3 weeks and there's still something outstanding with a client, like, I will check in either through email, sometimes through phone, but, like, some clients prefer not to talk over the phone, or just it's easier to do through email. One of my clients, like, I will email her and, you know, she just has such an overloaded inbox that, like, if it's something urgent, I'll just text her and just be like, hey, mm-hmm. I don't know if mm-hmm. you saw this, but this is, you know, something I wanted to discuss with you. And then, yeah, if it's something that is better to discuss over the phone, we'll set up a call. So I think that's been the great thing about having, you know, starting out with a smaller list of clients is that I have the time to really, in the headspace, to be thinking, okay, what else needs to be done here? How else can I help out in this instance? And what is my client's main focus right now? And how can I kind of be ushering along these other projects too?
Awesome. All right. That was something that we were talking about. I can't remember who it was I was chatting with recently about sometimes when an author signs with an agent, and even when they sign a publishing deal, they're not provided guidance on like kind of their professional representation online. Because I used to be a publicist, so I teach classes on press kits, having a press kit ready. Mm-hmm. And I often teach to authors published with traditional publishing houses, and they've never been told to have any of this stuff ready, you know? So I think it's really important that you have that conversation with them.
Yeah.
And that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And having something as simple as a bio, you know, on a website, mm-hmm. and just, even if it's literally just a landing page with your bio, yeah. somewhere that you can direct people, you know, if you're on Twitter a lot, like just having somewhere that will like kind of direct people mm-hmm. who want to check out your work, to be able to go to.
Yeah, definitely. I'm also an event planner, and so I'm always the person looking for that information, right?
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, bios come in handy. It takes a lot of work up front to like really get it down, but then it'll be used, you know, throughout. And then once you have it, you can just tweak it and make changes yeah. as, you know, you get published more and as you get more book deals.
Yeah. One of the things I always, when I teach about bios, is I always say, brag about yourself. Like, I know it goes against a lot of people's instincts, but like, talk yourself up, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we have another question from Lodestar. I saw you attended the Beijing International Book Fair. He's very excited by this. do you speak Mandarin, or would you have to in order to attend?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I went to Beijing in 2018 and had a great experience there. It was really, really amazing. I myself don't speak Mandarin, which I'm kicking myself now, because my mom would drag my brother and I to Chinese school every Saturday until we begged to not have to go. Oh. It was so much homework. And now I truly regret it. I wish I had stuck with it, because I tried learning on Duolingo, like the basics, and it's so hard. Mm-hmm. It's a really tough yeah. language. So yeah, Lodestar, if you can speak Mandarin, all the more to you. Like, that is really, really incredible. But no, we didn't have to in order to be able to attend. They did a great job of providing people who were able to translate and speak English. And they also had this technology. I mean, I guess it's probably not anything new, but it was the first time I'd seen it, where you just have the headset and somebody's in the back as somebody is speaking, and they will be like speaking into a microphone, and it'll be kind of being broadcast to everybody's headset. So, and you can change, you know, if you need it, if it's the speaker speaking in English, then, you know, if you only speak Mandarin, you'd have the headset and the person would be translating for you into your ear. So yeah, it was, cool. It was a really cool experience.
That's like some UN level stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. And I think they're still like pretty young and starting out as a book fair. Mm. I think when I went, it was like their 25th year compared to, you know, Frankfurt and London, but I think they were doing some really cool things. It was really cool to see that side of the market too, and like how innovative it is and kind of what areas they are really growing in and building out in. So yeah, it was awesome.
Cool. That reminds me, when I went to Tokyo Disneyland, specifically went to like the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, you know, thing. They had headsets for people who spoke English, because of, you know, it was broadcast in Japanese, and I've done that in Orlando, you know, the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience in Orlando.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the original English recording. It was like re-recorded in English by different actors, because the video is like the original actors from like the, right. the English recording. And I was just like, why? Why? I guess it's a copyright thing, maybe. I don't know, but maybe. it was weird. Wow. Yeah. All right. So you did not have these questions on the questions I sent you because they're quick round questions, and I just like to get like first thought. So, but they're fun. They're not, you know, it's fine. Yeah. So the first question is the final question that has like a little bit of an intro is when it was like coming up with the name for the show, which was a spinoff of Pup Talk Live. I am terrible at naming things, like really, really bad at naming things. And so I'd ask my Patreon supporters, like if they had any suggestions. And Lodestar had actually suggested snack time with an agent, which I thought was cute because it like I wanted it to kind of convey like a, you know, a casual like atmosphere. But I also was worried that it would imply that it was only for like kidlit when it's for, you know, all different categories. So this question is what remains from that title. All right. What is your favorite snack?
Oh my gosh. Well, snacks happens to be one of my other passions. and actually, it's funny because there is an Instagram account called Live from Snack Time, but it's just really cute. And it's, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's just like kids say the darndest things, but like, yeah. But it's usually around snacks. So I guess I feel like I go through phases. Right now, I'm super into these spicy mochi nuggets from Trader Joe's. I usually have them on my desk. I don't have them right now. but they're just like this like puffy, they're made from the same material as, you know, what is in the dessert mochi. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of, it's covered in like this almost like hot Cheeto, spice. It's it's a little different from that spice, but yeah, it's just like crispy, crunchy. It like has that like the spice that lingers, which I love. I also love spicy things, and so that would be my current favorite right now.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to check those out. I have a soy allergy, and a lot of times anything with mochi in it also has soy flour in it, but I'll look and see. What is your preferred caffeine source?
Coffee, intravenously. yeah, no, I will have at least 2 to 3 cups a day. And my partner and I actually just got like the Chemex like thing and the whole gooseneck kettle. And so we're really all in on the coffee. We have like our own grinder and we grind it, you know, so it's extra fresh. But yeah.
Nice.
Coffee all the way.
Yeah. We have a ongoing coffee versus tea battle here. So
yeah.
I'm team coffee, obviously.
have to be.
I don't think Jay is here today. She's usually the leading voice for team tea, but
I do love tea, but I also would not be able to survive without it, without coffee.
Yeah. Do you have a word or words that you irrationally hate?
Oh my gosh, yeah, actually so many. I feel like recently sure has been one of them, even though I find myself using it. But yeah, I don't know why whenever somebody says sure, it's such a passive affirmative to me that it's like almost passive aggressive, like sure, you know? Yeah, but I feel like I have others. Moist, I also don't like, but I don't know if that's from the How I Met Your Mother episode. You know, I don't know where that came from. It might have just come from that TV series and then kind of became a joke and then a real thing from then. Yeah, I can't think of any other words that I really dislike, but for sure, sure. But like not when you use it in for sure. Like, you know, because that's so different.
When it's like standalone.
Right. Yeah. When it's sure period or sure semicolon or sure comma. Yes. Like
sure followed by
just say yes. Just say yes. Like, or yeah. Like, if you're agreeing to it, agree to it.
I'm
Yeah, I
thinking
don't know.
about now, sometimes I say sure thing.
Yeah, it's different though, you
Yeah,
know?
I feel like it's a different energy to it.
Yeah.
All right. Is there any person that you would like to read a memoir from that, as far as you know, hasn't published one?
Oh, can they be,
Anyone?
unfortunately, anyone, like living or dead? Okay, like I would definitely read a book by Selena then. I feel like, especially with this Netflix series that just came out, I just feel like we don't really ever get to see her side of the story, and I just think it would be really fascinating. I love her music, and she's like one of the like constants in my life aside from books, and so I don't know. I was a dumb kid actually, and this is really embarrassing, but when I watched the J-Lo version of the movie, Gregory Nava's film, when I was like five, I thought it was like actually her. Like I was like, how did they capture her life leading up to like this moment? Like that's so crazy. But yeah, I was a dumb kid. Still really loved that movie and would love to read her memoir if she were
Cool.
ever able to write it and come back from,
Yeah.
the dead.
Cool. Very good answer. All right, if you have one, who's your favorite superhero?
Oh man. I'm not really into the whole
It's okay. That's fine. If you can say
superhero
that, it's okay.
thing. Yeah. Gosh, I would say, can I say Sailor Moon?
Yes, for
Because
sure.
she's a
100%.
superhero to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up watching her and love her. And I wish they would bring, do a reboot of her. Yeah, I'm not like super into the Marvel DC thing. But yeah,
No,
I'm super
Sailor
into
Moon
Sailor
is,
Moon.
yeah, perfect. Great answer. Heather is very excited by your answer. Yeah, the only time I really judge people is when they say like Batman. I'm like, is that the only superhero
Right. I
you
know. I
know?
know.
That's
And if
no
we were
offense to
to
the
get
Batman fans out there,
if we were
but.
get to get really specific, it wouldn't even be Sailor Moon, it'd be Pluto, I think. But I like
Yeah.
all of them.
Yeah. Like my niece, her favorite, I asked her her favorite superhero is, and she said Elsa, and I was like, yeah, that's legit. Good answer.
Yeah.
All right. I think this is gonna be our last question because we have been chatting for quite a while now. What is your single best query letter tip?
Oh gosh, single best. Can I give a three-part answer?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the first thing is, the ones that really stick out to me are when they are personalized in some way of like, I think you would like this because you are a fan of Leigh Bardugo. Something as simple as that shows me that like you're not just sending out a mass query, but like you actually took the time to see like what I'm looking for and how your work lines up with that. And then I kind of am on this like thing where, at the end of the day, it's like we're two humans that love books that I want to know about you. Like, not just the bio, but like I love it when there's a line of like, you love dogs, or just like you love this weird thing, or I
You love
think
Sailor Moon.
exactly, yeah. Any Sailor Moon fans out there, make sure to include that. Yeah, so I just think, keeping it personalized to whoever you're querying, but also not being afraid to kind of show a little bit about yourself and your personality. I think those always really stand out to me, and they just help give me a sense of like this isn't just like a robot that's querying me out of like 500 other people. And then I would lastly say like keep it short and sweet. If you're not able to talk about your work, in the pitch for like in 1 to 2 sentences, like you should workshop that a little bit more. You should be able to kind of give a brief, like, what is this project? It's surprising to me how many times, like, I will read a query and be like, after reading the letter, I'm like, I still don't really know, is this a YA? Is this an adult novel? Like, what is it? Like, you know, it's about these teens, but like, are you targeting it towards adults, like as a crossover? So yeah, I think that is kind of like one of the basics. But that's what kind of I look out for.
Awesome. All right. So thank you so much, Amanda, for joining me today and
yeah, thanks so much
with us and answering everyone's questions. If you're watching live, thank you so much for joining us live. I love it when y'all interact and ask questions. It's always fun. But if you're watching the replay, appreciate that too. And if you're listening on the podcast version, always happy to have you, however you're consuming, watching, listening, whatever you're doing. So we have coming up Wednesday, we're doing our Wednesday write-ins every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Come and join us. You can write, you can plot, you can blog, you can clean your bathroom. Like, people come and do all sorts of things. And then on the next Pub Talk Live is next Saturday, and my special guest is Stacey Whitman. So that's going to be super fun. I'm looking forward to chatting with her. And everyone stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.